This episode of The A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
You're the guy that everybody in the room is like, oh my god, Matt, that's the worst smelling fart ever. And you're like...
yeah, oh, don't.
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to your ears by ManaDeprived.com, home of Canadian Magic.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI court for crimes they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
Anything that costs a shit ton of mana, you're just like, bang! And you're like, fuck. How does that go? Bang! Fuck!
Jay Boosh.
And that's like the hyper angle. I never want to play in another GP again. I never want to play in another GP.
Jeremy.
And you're the reason I play Magic today. I'm like, I just like, I died. I was like just melting on the inside like that. I have inspired this kid to play Magic.
And Matt.
So I'm having this conversation with this guy in Chile about my deck. And then I'm getting pizza from a guy in Canada. Like, Magic is fucking weird.
And now, The A-Team.
Welcome to episode 272 of The A-Team. I'm Jay Boosh. I played in a pre-release this weekend, cheated, and won, because I'm the best. More on that
Woo-hoo!
Later. Hopefully most of you made it through that, like, 30 seconds of dead air. It wasn't really that long, but it seemed like a long time, right? Just like
you're just
the last
make
time. Yeah, yep. Just like the last time I talked to my friend Jeremy and Matt, and Jeremy made everyone uncomfortable. Hey, what's up, Jeremy? Welcome back.
What do you mean I made everybody uncomfortable?
Yep.
Bullshit.
It's because I was right.
Oh, no.
And you were
right.
Wrong.
Yeah.
You weren't
and that's,
right.
That's Matt, the right content Mendoza. He's
oh,
back.
My goodness.
It's just a, you know, Jeremy's got a black eye this
yeah.
week.
Black eye.
Save us all, Jay.
That's because Matt Safe Space Mendoza punched you in the face. So, that's not nice. And then, KYT's here. KYT, have you seen Batman versus Superman yet?
I have. Wow, what a great question.
Is it the worst?
It's not the worst, but it wasn't great.
Did you regret making that pick at the theater in your pack of movies that you could have chosen?
Oh, I don't know. It's hard to say because it's one of those, like, you have to see things. Like, should those even exist, I guess, is what I'm saying?
What do you mean you have to?
Because it's a Batman movie. I have to watch it.
That's the best. Master, like, as he's talking himself through his own opinion of this movie, he asks himself if movies this bad should even exist. Okay, that's the aim.
Regretting it. When you regret, you wish you didn't do it, right? But I would always, if I went back in time, I would have done it every single time, probably.
Unless right.
So had you not regretted, you still would have regretted.
It's like... It
so what you're
change.
Saying is that you're living like the worst version of Groundhog Day ever.
Even if every one of my friends told me it was the worst movie of all time, I think I'm still going. Like, I don't...
You're the guy that everybody in the room is like, oh my god, Matt, that's the worst smelling fart ever. And you're like, yeah, it is.
Oh, no.
It is. All right, so in the scale of, like, say, Christian Bale to George Clooney.
Val Kilmer.
Where is Ben Affleck on that scale? He's worse than X. He's better than X.
The Batman squeeze.
He's better than Clooney, but I don't know if you felt the same way, Jay. I felt like they split the screen time way too much, so there wasn't that much like Bruce Wayne or Batman to as much as I would have wanted to see. They just like shared too much, and then they had Wonder Woman, and then they have just like tons of dream sequences. So.
Well, I think a big issue was, you know, they tried to get, so what they're obviously doing is trying to catch up to Marvel, which is not, I mean, that's not even like a stab. Like when people say that, like, oh, you're just a net decker. It's like, fuck, shut your mouth. No one gives a shit. So basically DC Comics is trying to like net deck their way into the Marvel, you know, pro tour meta. And that's fine. And what Marvel did, though, was great because they did like 100 movies about each individual hero. Then they did one big movie with all of them, right? What DC is doing seems to be that they're just going to reinvent Batman every 9 years and Superman, which nobody's asking for. Like, no one's asking for a fucking Aquaman movie. And then what they do is that instead they just do... like Batman versus Superman with guest appearances by every bad superhero you can think of leading up to the Justice League. But we don't want to give them their own movies because no one would watch them. So we'll just give you a 20-minute version real quick. Yeah.
Was the Martian Manhunter in it?
I think he had a little cameo.
Did he? I didn't see him.
It was him or Killer Croc. I can't really remember.
What? I agree with that criticism. I felt if people watched that movie, they would agree. Where it also felt like they were purposely previewing the upcoming Justice League movies when like it didn't make like they were referencing it. Yeah. So, like, it didn't make any sense.
And like TV shows do that all the time, in like the season finale, right? In the last shot of the season finale, it'll be like you'll see like some fucking, you know. You'll see like a shot of Spider-Man in the X-Men movie, right? And you're like, oh! And then you gotta wait like 2 years for some fucking Spider-Man X-Men crossover. Yeah, that sounds like the worst. And you know how you know I'm making this up? Because it's a fucking Marvel movie, and they don't do that. So, yeah. So like, out of all the actors, there's like, I mean, Val Kilmer was pretty bad, but he, as like a Batman, he wasn't.
He was good, crazy.
He was, yeah, and you know what? That was also that you got to remember. Like Batman Forever had fucking Tommy Lee Jones in it, and Jim Carrey. Like that Jim was a Carrey. Wacky. That was like a wacky ass movie. You know what I mean? Like that's not Bat Nipples, Bat Credit Card wacky, but it was pretty fucking fucked, but awesome fucked. Right, so I feel like that's why George Clooney is like the zero, not Val Kilmer, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Michael Keaton, I think, is better than Val Kilmer.
Oh, 100%.
I agree with that.
Adam West, you got to give Adam West like.
I think Adam West is like when you remember. Do you remember the BZ list?
Yes, I do. Adam West is BZ.
Yeah, he's the middle of the pack.
Yeah, he's the over under.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that.
Like, and I put then, Keaton ahead of Adam West.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think it goes, like, Bale, Keaton, West, like, Kilmer, Clooney.
Yeah, but where do you fit in? Like, how did Ben Affleck?
Ben Affleck is behind Hendon Walsh, who is a girl that played the voice of Batman in the cartoon. And nothing against, like, I'm not saying she's a girl.
Is she good?
Batman. What I'm saying is just that, like, it's very obvious that a girl is doing Batman's voice, and I still think that I believe that it was a Batman more than Ben Affleck. I hate Ben Affleck. I hope he dies.
Whoa, whoa.
So is that below Adam West?
Yeah, like, I think Ben Affleck did, like, a Clooney 0.5-ish job.
So below Clooney?
Oh, yeah, like, pretty close. Pretty close to below Clooney.
So, like, worst film Batman.
Ugh, like, very close.
Okay, so was he better than Kevin Smith in the Batman costume flying across the thing in Mallrats when Jay screamed, "Fly, fat ass, fly"?
I mean, I'm going to admit something. I have never seen Mallrats.
Oh.
But I still have to say no, he was not better than that, based on just your description of that alone, and the fact that Steve Buscemi in that movie had long hair, looked kind of not like he had gotten run over by a truck, and was a rock star.
In what movie?
In Mallrats. He was in the band.
What band?
Yeah! Exactly! Exactly! Yeah. So anyway. Magic, though. Magic content.
What band? I mean,
you know someone's going to complain about this, even though they don't come here for serious magic content. And that they like talking to us about our lives, and it's basically just a nerd podcast where we can talk about anything nerdy. So back up off me.
BDM and Flores talk about basketball all the time.
No one gives a shit about all the garbage they talk about. Fuck.
They get their proper amount of shade, I guess.
Shade. Are you trying to
did you sigh when you see them rehash the Batman origin story yet again?
Yeah. Like fucking every time. Like there's no one on the planet that's watching this movie for the first time ever hearing about Batman. No one is picking fucking Ben Affleck as the first Batman of all time. Nobody. We don't need to see that again.
So and in this version of it, do his parents die?
Like fuck.
I want to know how far off script they went.
It'd be great. That's the thing, is it would be fucking great if in the next Batman reboot that they do, where fucking like, who's a hot actor right now? Let's just type that into Google. Hot actor. Oh, I wrote hot Google. Whoops. Hot actor. Okay, images. Let's pick somebody. Yeah, Channing Tatum or that fucking Chris Pine motherfucker.
He's Captain America. Isn't he?
No,
that's Chris Evans. Chris Pine's Star Trek.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
His face just looks like you want to punch him. Or like Jake Gyllenhaal. Ugh. So the next reboot they do with that guy, it'd be great if like his parents die in like a fucking car accident and he's like a normal person and then he just goes crazy. That would be great. Or if his parents die because they were trying to buy drugs. Like
on Reddit, they have writing prompts.
I love that.
Yeah, I love them. And one of them was like, retell a story where it's like a traditional superhero story or something like that, but change up like one dramatic moment and play it out. And the one person wrote about the whole Batman situation, but when he kills the parents, he also kills the kid. And the crook goes...
End of story.
He kills off them, but he goes back and he feels like just absolutely devastated that he killed the kid. And he talks to like his like support network, who are all these criminals and all the guys he works for. And everybody's just like, no, that's what you have to do. That's what you're in for, blah, 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 blah. And it talks about like how like all the guilt kind of like reforms him into like not wanting to live that life anymore. And eventually it just becomes a Batman story that like, somehow he like comes across like getting all the money from the Waynes through some stupid thing, and he becomes Batman.
That's wow! Awesome.
Yeah, it was actually the way that they wrote it out and told it was really good. I wish I could do it any sort of form of justice, but if you want to browse through Reddit or
actually,
Google or whatever,
that subreddit is actually super cool. Just for just to get my imagination going. Like a lot of times, I don't have time to like jump in there and read like every single one. Like I used to do that, right? And but then it just got like you're just reading like a lot, and it's like, fuck. I mean, my shit's been over for 20 minutes, and I'm reading a fake story. Like, come on. But some of them are really good, and like a lot of times, like I said, it's just it's like almost like a shower thought where like, you know, somebody will prompt you to write something, and you'll just think in your head like, oh, that's kind of cool, and then my imagination will just go with it for a little while I'm just mindlessly doing something. So it's a sweet fucking subreddit. But yeah, so I would recommend no one ever see this movie. even if KYT is stuck in some weird universe where he has to watch it.
One of the judges at Edmonton posted on his Facebook the entire, like, just spoiled the entire movie and said, this movie was terrible, I jumped on the grenade for you guys, you don't have to watch it. And, like, spoiled the whole movie just straight up, like, this happens. So, it was pretty funny.
I'm now typing furiously in the chat about
how
stupid
how
stuff
furious.
Like that.
What are you typing?
What are you typing? Stop typing, stop typing. Stop typing, stop typing.
Stop typing.
Yeah, so what did you guys do this week? KYT, let's start with you.
I watched Batman and read Batman comic books.
Do you read the comics though?
I'm in and out. I started again when they DC like just recently, from what I know, I'm not one of those super comics experts, just recently again what's that word I'm looking for? Relaunch? No. Like they rebooted their universe again. They had rebooted 5 years ago and called it the New 52 universe. And I started there
because it was after 52, right? Or was that during the 52 series?
That started it.
Yeah.
Oh, the 52 series started it?
It was okay. New 52 came out. Like, New 52 started, and then the series 52 started from then, I believe.
Oh my god, you guys are fucking nerds.
I'm into comics.
Wow. Too, so. I didn't know that.
At the New 52, which is 5 years ago. 5 years ago, were they... Because, like, as someone that didn't get into it, it worked. Their marketing scheme worked on me for someone that hasn't been reading comics. And it's like, Batman number one. You know, I get to start from the beginning. So it does work.
Yeah, for sure. Okay.
And I read a bit of Scott Snyder's stuff. And he's been one of the more critically acclaimed writers in the New 52 universe. So I've been reading that. But now, apparently... they've just like rebooted it so that the New 52 doesn't even matter anymore. From what I know, they just went back to like pre 52 and changed some stuff I just read about it today. But yeah, I like reading it. I just like reading more stories about my favorite character.
Yeah. So, Scott Snyder is definitely a fantastic writer to come out of that New 52 stuff. Other titles, if you guys are interested in, New 52, like, fantastic stuff. Animal Man and Swamp Thing were incredible when they first started, as well as Green Lantern from the New 52, like, the first 12 issues.
Yeah, Jay?
They have a whole bunch of colors now. Isn't he, like, isn't there, like, Black Lanterns and Red Lanterns?
I mean, there was that before.
Purple Lanterns, and... That's very confusing.
Do you then, like, follow along, KYT, or do you just pick up an issue here or there?
I'd like to, if I'm reading, I'd like to buy, like, follow from beginning to end, or buy the ones that collect, like, the last X, you know, the whole
trade paperbacks.
Right. Yeah, okay. Okay, cool.
Yeah, that's the best way to read comics, in my opinion.
Yeah, like, I don't really read comics a lot, but when the Avengers came out, it might have been, I think it was when the original Avengers came out, not Ultron. I kind of got really into them, and I really like them. I've always been a Marvel versus DC guy. Like, I've always been a Nintendo versus Sega guy and stuff like that. And Brian, Easy Beasy, got me, for my birthday, actually, was super great. He got me two entire runs of the Avengers. And they came out in, like, these big, like, not just trade paperbacks. They're, like, big fucking, like, 3-inch thick hardcover books. And they follow entire Avenger storylines from start to finish over, like, the course of however many years. So he got me one that was, like, the, like, Avengers number one kind of thing. Like, when all that started, like, back in the fucking... I have to say 50s. Like, it's so old and so random that, like, in one fucking comic... fucking the Hulk's name is like Scott, like Banner, and then in the next issue it's David Banner, and then in the next issue it's fucking Bruce Almighty. Like it's so ridiculous.
It's Bruce Banner belted by gamma rays turned into the Hulk.
Incredible.
Yeah, and I'm, like, reading it, and then I'm like, damn it, Bruce, calm down. And I'm like, Bruce? And I go back, like, 4 pages, and I'm like, damn it, David, calm down. And I'm like, what the fuck?
That's why he was so pissed off nobody could figure out his name.
He's that guy, right? You're like, it's Brian, right? No, it's Brendan. Oh, okay. Well, sorry, Brandon. But yeah, so I don't read a lot of comics because I find them... I don't know. It's like I don't watch shows once a week either. Like I like to binge. So I was just wondering if somebody who is as crazy as about Batman as you are. like binges or like reads and like, are you the guy that has like a file at the comic store kind of thing? And
no, Mendoza yeah. might.
Yeah, do you? You, Matt?
I do, actually, yes.
So do you go in and get, like, fucking, like, 30 comics every Wednesday kind of thing, and...
No, I get, like, probably...
30?
No, man, like, that's what it's like. Five, yeah.
One to... I mean, like, this week I don't have anything on my title or anything on my pool coming out, but, like, in 2 weeks, like, next week I'll have, I think, one or two books, and then in 2 weeks I'll have, like, three or four or so. But yeah.
Okay, sweet. And then what do you do?
Putting stuff in the chat.
And then what do? Do you just like? Do you just...
Oh, is that your phone replying to things in the chat?
Why is your phone doing that?
Because I have Skype on my phone.
Oh, what the fuck? Are you 100 years old? Don't you have a computer?
Yeah.
Why are you using?
I am using it. I can also have Skype on my phone.
You're using two at a time.
Oh, it's logged fucking, in. Yeah, like it happens to me.
Yeah, it's pretty funny because my iPad at home gets all of the Skype messages from when we podcast.
Really?
Yeah, so like if the wife's on it or my daughter's on it, there is a chance that she has seen Nutscapes. Thanks, Jay.
That's great. Hey, I didn't know. In my defense, I didn't know that if I just showed you some pictures of nuts, that you would just let your daughter run around willy-nilly with
I wouldn't.
All right. Anyways, so yeah, so then do you go home? Do you just run home and do you run home and read all that shit? Or what do you, like...
Run home!
Wow. You're painting
to the couch.
A nerdy picture, Jay.
Yes. Yeah.
No. I just go. I pick them up. Sometimes, I mean, I don't even go on Wednesdays all the time. Like sometimes I'll just let it build up. But
fucking casual. Okay.
Yeah. That's it. That's
call me casual.
But yeah. So
if it doesn't go on,
actually, I took all the time that I would have been spent pre-releasing and basically read comics. So, got caught up on my pile basically.
See everybody at home. This is why this podcast doesn't have any fucking magic content on it. Because the content didn't even go. He just fucking read, like, Black Panther number 52. The blackest of panthers.
Do you read any comic stuff at all? Like, have you gone through a comic phase? Anything like that?
I did when I was young. But again, like, I did the same thing, like, with comics. Like, when you're young, like, my parents were never nerdy, so they didn't get me into that stuff. And I feel like sometimes that's better. Like, you know, when dad gets you into magic, you have like a foundation. Maybe it's not better, but it's just like different, but not in a bad way. But it's like you have a foundation for how to play. And you probably will maybe like some of the decks that like he likes because that's what he's going to show you. He's not going to build a deck he hates to show you how to play magic, right? And so like, if me and you were just like 12 and walked into a comic book store or I guess nowadays like a Walmart and saw magic cards and just bought them, that'd be like a very different, I guess, foundation of our magic career, say now that we're 30, than if, you know, someone had shown us an older brother or like somebody like that. So my parents were never like nerdy. And as you guys will know, is back in like the 80s and 90s, if you liked this stuff, it was definitely not okay like it is nowadays. Like it was, you're definitely like a nerd. So the way that I got into comics was like, I'm pretty sure I just like got one for a birthday or something once, and it was probably like, you know, X-Men number 5,000,000, right in the middle of a storyline, read this random comic, and I was like, wow, this is cool, not knowing even like what was going on, you know what I mean? Like it's kind of like reading the middle chapter of a book. And so I did that all the time with comics. I would just be in, like, say, like a Shopper's Drug Mart or like a, I guess, what, like a Walgreens for the American people. And you know, they would have like racks of just random comics. And I would just like see one that looked cool on the cover or something, and I would buy it. And it would be like, you know, $2. And then I would just read that kind of thing, right? I did it a lot when I was like traveling, like on airplanes and stuff.
Yeah.
So, and I did the same thing with like Dragonlance. I used to get chewed out all the time for that because I'd read like, you know, I started reading Dragonlance with like when I walked into a fucking chapters, and my aunt, who's a teacher, like a school teacher, asked me what I wanted for Christmas, and I was like, I don't know, let's go to the mall. I was like 10 years old, and she's like, let's go to the mall, we'll buy you your Christmas gift. And I, because she's like, I want to buy you something that you'll actually use. And I'm like, okay. And we walk into, she's like, but I'm not going to buy you a toy. And I was like, what the fuck? You couldn't have told me that before we got in the car. Now I'm trapped with you to the mall. And you're going to buy, like, you're going to buy me like some fucking newspaper or something. So we get to this, we get to like chapters. And I didn't really read before, unless it was for school. And I saw this book called The Doom Brigade, which had like a picture of a draconian on the front. And for those of you that don't know what that is, it's like a 7-foot-tall dragon person. Like, instead of a dragon, it's like a dragon man, right? And this is like the newest Dragonlance book. And I was like, this looks cool. I want this for a book. And she bought it for me. And that's like the latest book. That's like starting at season 6, episode 9 of Game of Thrones. You just like, it's on. So you're just like, hey, this looks good. I'll just watch this. That's what I did. And I just get chewed out all the time for that. And I did that with fucking comics, too. So. I actually found it kind of difficult to read through those Avengers comics that Brian got me, because they, like, the best way, in my opinion, to read them is, like, to read the entire storyline, because it's like a novel, but then, because they're, like, so, like, broken up, or they're so, like, what's the word? They're, like, in, like, they're created, like,
episodic, or episodic.
Yeah, they're episodic, yeah, because they're so episodic, it's, like, sometimes I couldn't read, like, more than one at a time. Whereas I could, like, read a book for, like, hours at a time. But just, like, sometimes I couldn't read, you know, more than one issue or even half an issue of this Avengers comic, because it's so episodic that I was just, like, you know, like, God, I, like, need some fucking storyline here that, you know, is longer than 15 pages, please, kind of thing. So, yeah, so...
Jay, if you want to give a good trade paperback, so trade paperbacks are collections of issues, much like the ones that BZ got you, I would suggest a book for you called Transmetropolitan.
Transmetropolitan.
Good one.
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
It is the story of Spider Jerusalem, and he is kind of like a crazy rogue journalist following like the whole mindset of... Hunter S. Thompson, and he is in a near future society where the degradation of morals and like what is, you know, considered, you know, proper behavior is kind of just followed down its path. Like instead of Sesame Street, it's a show called Sex Puppets. People just have all kinds of, like, everything is screwed up. It's
the world kind of, just gotten
like everything that's bad about the world. How, like, oh, it wasn't like this back in my day. Well, it's that progression that everything's gotten so bad.
So this is not like a superhero.
Nope. Not a superhero. Okay. It's a journalism. It's like the journalist, he's trying to tell the story of what's going on in the city. And it's kind of centric around, an election and the current president and the election coming up and all that kind of BS. Okay, and it's him telling his story and all these different groups and people and how they're being abused and how these people are abusing. And just it's a really, really cool book, but it's also very over the top. Lots of outrageous situations.
Okay, cool. What is it called?
Transmetropolitan.
Transmetropolitan. Cool.
I think it's like 12 or 13 books for the entire series.
Oh, okay. Cool.
But yeah, really, really good.
Cool. All right, well, what else did you do, KYT?
So I actually didn't do the Midnight pre-release, which I've done like 5 out of the last 6 times. I didn't pre-release on Saturday, but I felt for the show and for, I guess, my job, so I had to play one on Sunday. At my local card store called Check Swing. Once again, the good old store that does pairings by hand still. And my
they do pairings by hand?
Yeah.
Really?
It's brutal. It's brutal. I don't know if it's even allowed, so anyways.
It is. Yeah. It's a real pain in the butt to report.
He does it. I guess he goes home and types it all up.
Submit via spreadsheet.
And Avacyn brutal. Was my promo, so I was pretty happy, but it my white otherwise was one of those typical problems where my best card was in one of my more uninteresting colors. It wasn't shallow, it just didn't have a lot of good depth, I would say. So I opted to play...
Explain that for people that don't know what you mean.
I feel like there's a lot of times when even though you have one card that's a bomb, you might not... There's like a percentage of time... I don't know the actual math of you drawing that card. So you have to view whether playing the odds of you drawing that card to change the game is worth it versus you drawing multiple copies of a bunch of cards that are good enough to win. So I'd rather be in the second scenario than draw like... this is especially true if you think you're a better player than your opponents. You don't need to rely on, oh shit, I got to draw Avacyn every time to win the game.
Right.
You can just have multiple avenues of victory. So you rather go for the consistent plan. Again, assuming you think you're a better player, that's usually the best way to go.
Sorry, how is that? So what you're saying is like, if you say have like bombs and shit, that's different than if your pool is like mediocre but not deep.
Right?
Like what I'm trying to do is like get you to explain the difference, because there's a lot of people out there, especially in sealed, because they don't get to play it a whole lot, where they don't understand the difference between that bad white, for example, and like shallow white. Does that make sense?
That makes sense to me. Like bad white, well, for maybe we have different definitions. For me, shallow just mean that like the other cards are good. They're just not. They're just like 3-2, like solid guys, but they're not exciting.
Like, yeah, or maybe like you have good cards, like say Avacyn, but you don't have consistently good of the color.
Right.
Whereas bad white would be like you have like a bunch of 6-drop 2/4s that don't do anything and like one removal spell.
Right. Right.
Okay. Okay. So,
comparing that to like blue, where I had the new Mind Control, Welcome to the Fold, and I had two copies of like I guess the new Delver of Secrets, Aberrant Researcher.
Is that card good?
I thought it was tremendous in
like
my
unlimited.
Deck.
Like you wouldn't play it in standard.
No, but it felt tremendous in limited, and that's example. It's like in a vacuum, Avacyn crushes all three of these cards, but.
Right.
I love all three of these cards better than most of the white cards that I have. So that's why I went the blue route. Did a little blue-black. And I think it reminds me of previous mechanics we talked about, Jay, where we felt certain mechanics, I can't think of the examples, but lend themselves to be more skill testing than others. And I do feel that way about Madness. In this format, I felt like a lot of more casual players were going through too many hoops just to get Madness going.
Uh-huh.
Or sometimes
so, like,
it was happening.
They were playing like when you sit down with someone, say, this week at FNM, and they have like a Madness deck versus just playing cards that are good with Madness.
Yeah, if they Johnny out too much.
Yes, exactly.
And there's a lot of good black cards that are insane, like just solid insane, like the 3/3 for just 2 mana, but when you play it you have to discard a card.
Mm-hmm.
Or the 2/1 for 2 that if you can discard a card to transform it and it becomes a 3/2 flyer. Again, these are both really solid cards, but if you have shitty enablers or stuff like that, then like from on the other side, if I have an easy way to deal with the 3/3, I'm pretty happy that you're just going down a card. Right? If I can just deal with it somehow, then I know I'm going to win. Once I trade that off, I have a huge advantage moving forward.
Yeah, so, 3/2 for 1s.
Yeah, so I'm happy, and I feel like that's the skill testing part. And then what was unique, when I had the original, when I was playing around with the black-white version, I saw cards that, the specific cycle of cards that are interesting to me is like Dauntless Cathar. Basically, once it's a 3/2 for 3, but once it's in your graveyard, you can exile it to put a 1/1 flyer.
Yeah,
so that's
one
a type of
it.
Guy.
Yeah, there's one that does it for like 2 flyers as well.
Oh, really? So those are the type of guys that you're happy to discard. You're not, well, you're not super happy, but you're not losing that much value. You can still put them in, get the 1-1 flyer. So it was interesting, especially sometimes depending on how the game goes, maybe you have too many cards because of the tempo, the pace of the game. You have too many cards in your hand that you can't just spit them all out. And this gives you a way to sort of take advantage of these, the 3-3 for 2, the 2-1 transform, and get rid of cards and do something significant with them. So I enjoyed that part, just seeing that that's a possibility and seeing as that that part of the deck construction. Like, I'm looking at this, I'm like, okay, I definitely want this because this is good to discard. This is one of my outlets. I need more outlets, or maybe I need more other things to fit. So it was pretty interesting on a deck building side to see what type of synergies I needed. And I ended up going 3-1. I lost my last round to a card that I think is just insane, Tireless Tracker.
So what does that do for the people listening at home?
It might even I wonder if it's constructed playable, actually, because it was so annoying. It's
a
3-2 for 3. Whenever you play a land, you get to investigate, so you get to put a clue every time landfall. You play a land.
Yeah, landfall clue, yeah.
And every time you sack a clue, it gets +1/+1.
I don't know if it's constructed playable.
It was as fuck.
It's very good.
And in the one game where I had in the finals, in the one game where I could stabilize if I could mind control the tracker, the problem is my opponent also had a Sigarda in play. So it had Hexproof. So of course. And I ended up losing to that. I felt my deck was just a solid flying deck with the 3/2s that could randomly steal games when they transform into fucking 5/4s, if I remember correctly. So it's like, what the fuck? My opponents were on the backseat whenever whenever I flipped the top card and was it instant or sorcery. I didn't go out of my way to trigger Delirium. I don't think I saw in all my games whether it never mattered, because that could be because my opponents didn't play a deck, construct a deck where that was a factor. But I had fun. I thought Madness, bringing back Madness is a sweet mechanic for the reasons that I've mentioned. But I fell from like being potentially second all the way to fifth or sixth even because.
Did people intentionally draw?
No, the manual tiebreaker.
Oh, manual tiebreakers!
I can't complain because it works both ways. Like, I could easily be the other guy that profits from the system, but basically he has to use game percentage instead of opponent's percentage. And but then again, the problem with this is that it leads to sort of collusion, because when in the last couple of rounds, if you beat a guy 2-1, you can tell them, be like, let's report it as 2-0, wink, wink, right? So that you're more assured of finishing for second. So that's a huge problem, because in all the years, I have to admit, I've been tempted, basically, where I beat someone 2-1 or I lost 2-1, and maybe I've been asked, like, oh man, let's just report it 2-0 so I can give you packs. So it leads to those kind of issues.
And I'd imagine there's people out there that would just report it as 2-0 and never tell their opponent. Like, a lot of people probably don't even notice. They just sign the slip.
Right. Do you have slips? You wouldn't have slips.
No. I meant in general, sorry. But yeah, even at a pre-release, yeah, I would just say, like, I think, actually, now that I think about it, at our pre-release, I don't even think we reported the fucking the games. We just said, like, we won.
Yeah, yeah. That's how it usually works.
And they were like, okay, thanks. Like,
But here it's funny, because normally it doesn't matter. You're either at a pre-release where they give prize based on match wins, your match win record, or they use the classic opponent's win percentage, however you do it. But here it's like, every game matters. It's like, fuck.
Yeah, like, I've never heard of this before.
So, yeah, it happens with, I guess, the only store with no laptop. And even though I lost in the finals, I'm just sitting there in the prizes, and I know I'm not going to finish second. It's just like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6? What the fuck? So I got two packs for losing in the finals.
Oh my god.
But again, it works both ways, so I've probably been on the better side of that before. Overall, fun format. I'm looking forward to playing it, but I was also like getting my mind working on, you know, what people might be able to play at GP Toronto, and I'm not sure there's that many constructed feeling cards outside of like the big name planeswalkers that I'm super excited about. Actually, when I look at them, they're like, I'm looking at Avacyn as potentially having some potential in different types of archetypes because it has fucking flash, and I love that.
Yeah, flash, it makes a difference.
But other than that, I haven't seen like a lot of, looking at all these uncommons and commons, they just look like limited cards. So I haven't been that excited. So,
You know, I'm terrible at figuring that out, mainly because I've been out of the game. Like, I've been out of standard for very long, so I don't, like, I kind of feel the same as, like, other than the obvious cards, I feel like there's not, I can't tell what, like, the sleeper cards are.
Yeah, me either.
You know, but that's, I mean, oftentimes it's because the card quality is terrible. Like, you know, like Vapor Snag, you know, maybe I didn't know how good Vapor Snag was, say, in Limited. Like, I don't know, I can't remember if I thought about that or whatever. But you know what, like, maybe, but like looking at a card like that, like when was the last time we had a one mana unsummon? And when was the last time we had a one mana pseudo removal card that had like an extra ability? You know?
Right.
Like Doomblade, when it came back, you knew, and like Murder even, it's like you knew that these were gonna be cards in, and like Bioblight to an extent, you knew that these were gonna be cards that were gonna be played in outside of their format. But I mean, like, there's no like, I would never play this fucking two mana destroy target tapped creature sorcery. Like,
no. I agree. There's just a lot of unexciting, cards.
Yeah. And, like, you know, all the fucking flip cards suck, just like they always have. And I don't know. Like,
oh yeah, one quick note to finish my thing. When I was playing my friend Ivan, who's famous among my friends for when I did a deck tech with him, when I interviewed him, this is like years ago, the video's gone, but when I asked him the reason for certain sideboard cards, he said they were for backup. So a lot of people made
backup?
Like,
what does that even mean?
Hey, sometimes you need backup.
Yeah. What the fuck?
That's when you know players have cyborg cards for reasons they can't even explain.
Like, and this is for backup.
Yeah.
Okay. Backup against what, Ivan?
And he tends to do a mistake. I've seen him do this a lot, against me in these sealed events, is where he, when I beat him with a bunch of flyers, and he feels like he needs an overwhelming amount of removal. So. Right. He'll sideboard so out his, like, he sideboarded out three creatures and for three removal spells and another color. He was green black. He went all the way to red to splash those red removal spells because I was beating them down. I guess with my 5/4s or some other big guy that I had, or a 5/3. Anyways, and in game two, I beat him. The game went me playing a guy, him killing it each time until he ran out of removal spells. I just had one guy kicking his ass, and he kept, you know, drawing no action and just spells, right? So yeah. I think that's the problem when you, like, over-adjust to make your deck not be able to win anymore. Sure, you can kill all my guys, but you don't have the right ratio anymore.
Yeah, like, you still have to be able to win, right?
Yeah. So just a quick piece of advice to anyone that ever felt like they had that similar issue, or, you know, like, he was like, man, all I draw is lands, and I'm like, well, because you sided out like a lot of your action.
So. Yeah.
Okay, that was my pre-release, Jay. What about yours?
I've talked a lot. Did Matt or Jeremy pre-release?
No, I'm in prison.
Okay, great. So, my pre-release is fun. I didn't play Oath, and I barely played, I guess I kind of played Zendikar, but, so I went to a new store in Airdrie called Treasure Cove, So shout out to them. It's an interesting store. It's like
close.
It's like, yeah, it's close. Yeah, it's like four blocks from my house. I wouldn't call it like even like a local gaming store so much as I would call it like I like really don't want to call it a pawn shop, but I don't know what like the other term for the, it's like a Tramps, but I don't know what if America has that. It's
It's
like they have everything. Like when my in-laws are here, we go there to look at silver coins because they collect old silver coins. And like they have like video games, like they have Ataris and the Super Scope is in there from Super Nintendo, and they have like a Game Boy Color and a bunch of games, and then they have this cool machine that'll play like Nintendo, Sega, and Super Nintendo games all in one machine, and then like so, and then they have like baseball cards, and then they have books, and then they have like a fucking an iron that's like 400 years old and made of rock. Like it's, they just have like everything, and they have toys and comics and magic somehow. So I don't know really what the word for like a store like that is, like a haberdashery or something. I don't know.
No,
it's like an antique store, but for nerd culture.
Yeah, it's exactly that. It's a nerdy antique store. Is what that? It's exactly what that is. They have like bayonets and shit. So
I bought my very first Blood Bowl team from a Tramps.
What's a Blood Bowl?
Blood Bowl.
Yeah, what's that?
It's Games Workshop's fantasy football game.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So it was cool. Like two things that were really, or like at least one thing that was really great, I guess in no particular order, I guess that's why I'm changing Mr. Bat. They had tables where only like four people could sit at them, and that's how they were set up, and not like side to side, end to end, like touching. So it was great because you got a little bit of extra room because, of course, they're not like exactly four-person size tables for Magic, right? They're just like kitchen tables you'd probably like they got. So they have like, you know, they could probably sit like six people, but it'd be small if two people sat on the end. But of course, people don't sit on the ends. So you had like lots of room and there was just four of you. And then like another table was like over there. And then like, so you weren't touching anyone's like fucking dirty, sweaty haunches or anything. And that's great. I like that. If your store can do that for me, I love it. So that was like a super bonus to this like non-magical Magic store that they had over like a regular Magic store. And so we played and like the people were, it was pretty casual. Like it was all, I want to say like it was the old guard a lot of the time. There wasn't a lot of kids. There wasn't a lot of dads with kids there, which, you know, you sometimes see at your pre-release quite a bit is, like, the new players getting into it, which is always fun. And, you know, they're always, like, the games that they do are always, like, really light. You know, like, you're always
having like, they're fun. The guys who walk in and they don't look for a duel. They look for a group game.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yes. So, and, you know, these guys are, like, the old, like, just, like, the leg, like, they've been playing forever. I wouldn't say they're good at Magic, but they've been playing forever, right? So that was, like, most of the crowd. So most of them were pretty chill. Like, they're all adults, and, like, they're all nerds, and you get your mix or whatever. But it was a pretty good crowd. It was fun. And I got to play with Jeremy, the other Jeremy. And our pool was, I don't know, it was great. Like, our white was similar to KYT's, was explaining it. Like, it wasn't shitty, but it definitely like wasn't deep. Like we had lots of removal, but we didn't have almost any creatures in that color, and like we couldn't really. You can't really like play a color in limited without creatures in that color. It's not generally. It's just like not worth the splash or whatever. So. I don't know, we kind of, like, passed on that, and then we played Two-Headed Giant, and one thing that I always find, like, that super sucks about Two-Headed Giant is, like, nobody gives you extra time to build your decks, and I feel like because I'm working at a pre-release, I'm working with, like, 12 packs instead of 10 or 8. I mean, sorry, instead of 6 or 8. I don't know, and I'm making 2 decks instead of 3, which would be, like, what a Team Trios event would have. I feel like I should have more than 30 minutes to build 2 decks, basically. Especially at a pre-release where, like, a lot of the cards I've never even seen before. So we had, like, 30 minutes to build our decks. And I got it down to about 50 cards, and I said, fuck it. I'm playing 50 cards at the pre-release. Fuck this. I don't give a shit. So we settled on red-white. Yeah, we settled on red-white because the creatures that we had in white weren't great, but they were the early guys that we had. Like, they were like the 3-1 fox, which actually ended up being pretty good. You know, we thought the 2-2 for 2 that with Delirium gets flying, we thought that card would be pretty good. What we found was it's actually kind of difficult to enable Delirium on your own. Like, I found it wasn't, like, our opponents never seemed to have a problem enabling it. But we could always get to, like, 3 out of 4 and then not get that fourth one a lot of the time. So for us, like, he was just a 2-2 for 2, which is fine and limited, I guess. And, you know, and then, but then, like, the red cards were really good. I really like the red cards in this set. They're pretty interesting. I like, there's that devil that when he comes into play, he hits your opponent for 1. And then if you have Delirium, he hits you every upkeep. That guy, Intuitive Giant's really good. What else?
Player hits each opponent, right?
Yeah, exactly. Correct. We didn't really have any bombs in red, except for we had that angel that when you deal us damage, you get a damage or whatever. And it's to your permanents as well. Like, it's when your creatures take damage too. That card was really good because it made a lot of people just not want to attack you. Because you just block, even if you're chumping, even if you're not chumping, and they're just making, like, a profitable attack, but you're, like, blocking one or two things. It, like, made their combat math really difficult, which it means that it's, like, just an interesting card to me kind of thing. And then I played blue-black. So I opened, of course, for my promo. I got lucky, and I opened Startled Awake, which is the exact card I wanted, if anybody remembers what I was talking about last week on the show, which was that I was not going to be excited to have to pay $1 million for this fucking mill card for my queue.
Yeah.
And, of course, I opened the promo version, so it's got, like, the pre-release date on it that I want, and it's all nice and foily. I never got to cast it, but I heard that there was, like, 2 or 3 people that had it for their promo, and I heard that it's just devastating and limited for 4 mana. It's just insanity. I got to open a Relentless Dead. Also, that card's expensive and kind of cool, and I wanted one for my cube anyway. It's not foil, but it's kind of cool. And mm-hmm. I just happen to have a lot of random zombies that it's just a good value card, basically. And I was playing, like, blue-black, like, control. Like, I never really attacked. I just wanted to gum up the board a whole lot and either win by milling you out or by using Triska Decaphobia. Grinding your game down, because I find it, especially in Two-Headed Giant, a lot of people don't realize that, like, aggro is a lot worse in Two-Headed Giant because you're playing basically against 2 different people. So they'll play a lot of their, like, fast little, like, 1 and 2 drops and stuff, and then you'll play, like, an 0-4 or a 1-3, and then they can't do anything. And if I play 1 on turn 2 and you hold up 3 mana, and then next turn, you know, I play something and hold up 3 mana, it's like they can't really do anything to you. So I really like playing, like, the slower, like, build my machine deck kind of things. And then, you know, I got a Westvale Abbey. So, like, actually, we got 2 Westvale Abbeys, and that's how we won most of our games. Was we just, like, grinded until we, like, 9-7 haste lifelinked you, and you died.
That seems pretty fair.
I mean, oh, yeah, and then, like, you know, and, like, I was really skeptical about that card, because I was like, well, like, why wouldn't we just keep making 1-1s and just gum them forever? Like, they're going to eventually lose. And Jeremy's like, well, because, like, not like, like, a 18-point life swing is pretty huge. And I'm like, yeah, but what if we just, like, transform it, and then they just fucking kill it or bounce it?
And, yeah.
And we just, we just self-wrathed, right? We just, like, wiped our own fucking board. And he was like, it's worth it, whatever, fuck it. So it, like, happened, and we did it. Every game that we won with that. I mean, it helped that I had 5 dead weights in my deck. And I had, like, 2 or 3 Geese's Bidding, which is, like, the 4 mana put 2/2s into play, and it, like, just bonus has madness for some reason. And, like, a card that I thought, like, normally you wouldn't think is very good, but that I actually really thought, like, was I was really surprised by was... What's it called now? Fuck, I was just looking at it, and now I can't remember. It's, oh, it's the wings, the fluttery wings cards, where it, like, gives +1/+1 in flying, and then you can discard a card to bounce a creature. So, like, because I was playing control, I would almost always play this on Jeremy's, like, 3-1 Fox, which became a 4-2 flyer, which, like, is, like, flying in this set, this feels like a core set. Flying in this set feels so powerful. And then if they ever killed him, I would just, like, discard my Geese's Bidding while I was holding up counter magic anyway, and then I would just, you know, play, I'd get two twos on their turn, like, at basically instant speed, like, which feels just so broken. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, like, I don't know, I had a really great time. I really liked the set. I thought that I kind of wouldn't. I didn't really care about the nostalgia, what? But then, well, just because, like, I never this care about that shit.
First set just, that you liked in ages.
I know, but it's just the same old, same old. Like, Magic is such a fucking boring, like, they're so lazy with their fucking, all of their shit. Like, all they do is rehash the same garbage over and over again. And then they claim, like, whatever. So then, you know, of course, like, I'm just like, whatever, who cares? We're returning to Innistrad, great. And I, like, looked at the spoiler and was kind of like, eh. None of these cards really seem insane to me. But actually, this was a super fun set. Like, the art was really great. And, like, all the callbacks to the old cards were super cool. And I had a really, actually, I had, like, a super fun time. And I was super hyped the morning of. I wasn't really hyped up until we were, like, on our way there, and then I was like, man, this is gonna be fucking sweet. And it was fucking sweet. So, there you go. Shout out to Tyler Winnick, who I met this weekend at the pre-release. I just wanted to give a big shout out. He was super great, him and his partner. I think his Two-Headed Giant partner's name is Matt, but to be honest, I don't remember. But Tyler Winnick of the podcast Vicious Integrity, once we were kind of got to chatting, and he found out I did a show, and he said, I did a show, and we chatted, and he's just a cool dude, so I wanted to make sure I let the world know about other cool dudes. Yeah, it was fun. I don't know. That's basically, so with this fucking Westvale Abbey card or whatever, of course, I'm playing it, and we get called, we win in the finals, and we get called cheaters while we're packing up the cards, but in this, like, passive-aggressive way. So I'm just like, I just call this motherfucker up. So here's the story. So the game is going late, and I'm playing against the, I don't know, I want to call him, like, the ringer. He's, like, 17 years old, maybe 16 years old, and he fucking, you know, he's probably the kid that, like, can afford Magic because he doesn't have rent, or his parents maybe buy the cards or whatever, which is, like, awesome. When I was that age, it was great to have hobbies that I could afford because I didn't have to pay a mortgage, right? That's how you get into hobbies, right? Is opportunity. So he's, and apparently, like, in the store, he's the villain. Like, he's the guy that everybody's like, oh, I gotta play, let's call him Bob, I don't know his fucking name. He's like, oh, I gotta play Bob in the finals, like, I lose for sure, kind of thing. And especially because, like, this store is kind of casual. So I'm playing him. We sit down, and I'm just like, first, of course, I knew it was going to be this kind of game. This kid has the attitude of, like, I'm Wayne Gretzky. So already I can tell, like, this is going to be a fun match. And so we sit down, and I'm like, all afternoon I've been doing odd or even, because there's no rerolls, and I just want to get the fucking die roll over with, and we all get a dice with our little, you know, Magic card box. So I always just sit down and I say, hey, I'm Jay. Like, and they're like, hey, I'm Trevor. And I'm like, hey, nice to meet you, Trevor. And then they're like, blah, blah. And I'm like, hey, odd or even. And I just say odd or even, and I hold up a dice. And nobody ever, apparently I'm the only person on the planet that does odd or even, and because nobody's ever ready for it. And then they reluctantly pick something. And then I think we won every single die roll. So that was great. But of course, in the finals against this guy and his partner, we're like, I'm like odd or even. He's like, she goes odd, and then I go to roll it, and it's even, and it comes up even, and then he goes, let's just roll a d6. And I'm like, what? Like, okay. And then, so he pulls out his, I'm like, I don't care, it's a fucking pre-release, like, fuck this kid. And so then he pulls out his dice, and he's like, oh, let's do poker roll. You guys want to do poker roll? And I'm like, no. And Jeremy's like, nope. And then he's like, do you guys know what poker roll is? Like, you just roll, like, five dice and make the best poker hand. And his partner's like, just fucking, we already lost. We picked even, and it was odd. Just fucking do odd or even. And he's like, you guys don't want to do poker roll? Come on, poker roll's the best. And we're just like, no. Like, you wanted to roll a fucking D6. Fucking, we roll one now, or, like, you're, like, that's it. Like, whatever, right? So then he, like, he just says, like, fine. I guess we lose the die roll. And she's like, thank you. Yes, we lost it, like, 3 minutes ago. he's just being this big baby. And then, so then we start to play or whatever, and he's playing, like, the only way I know how to describe this is probably not accurate or fair, but, you know those people that, like, are on the verge of being good at Magic? They have, like, a certain attitude about them, like, the way they draw their card, the way they flick their cards in their hand, the way they announce things, the way they play. Like, they have this, like, very deliberate, like, way about them. Like, they're, like, almost like they're better than every, like, than most people at Magic, say, in their environment. But then, like, they're the ones that follow, say, coverage and stuff. So then they're the ones that if someone, like, if a pro does something, then they, like, try to emulate that because they want to play like that person. So again, like, it's not to say that, like, I'm not making fun of him or anything. It's just very obvious. Like, I can tell that that's what is kind of going on, is that he's, like, very conscious of his actions, and he's trying to just, like, emulate the best players, which is good because he wants to be better. So we're playing, and he's just doing these very, like, deliberate things. He's the guy that says, like, untap, upkeep, you know, draw, whatever. And we're playing, and the game is going long, and me and Jeremy are just doing, like, our game plan. Like, you know, we're just fucking stalling the board, killing every creature you have, and then just, like, killing you with this giant land, or, like, killing you over time by just grinding you down or whatever. So we do that, and we put the land out, and it's, like, my 10th land, and Jeremy has 4 lands. He's, like, been stuck on land for, like, a while, and he makes the comment of, like, fuck, if I can, he, like, keeps showing me my hand. I'm like, what did we draw? And he, like, shows me the card, and he's like, just one land, like, that's all I need, like, one time. And he keeps saying it, like, every time he goes for his draw, he's like, one time. So he doesn't draw his land. And they untap, they draw, and then they play that new Pillage.
Okay.
Whatever it's called. It's like 4 or 5 mana, exile a land, and then it deals 2 damage to us. So they draw this new Pillage, and they pillage Jeremy's
Structural plane. Distortion.
Yes, thank you. Structural Distortion. So they Structural Distortion Jeremy's planes, thinking, like, okay, we got him on his land. He's, like, land screwed, which is a pretty good strategy if you consider that, like, you're playing 2 at a giant, and if you can basically, like, stop one of the giants from playing, then you're in pretty good shape. So, you know, this is what they figure. But they, like, for 2 turns, I've had this land in play, and they, of course, they don't do anything to it. They don't pillage that. So we just, and I have 4 creatures, right? So at the end of their turn, I just go, like, make a guy and then untap and, like, make a fucking 9/7 haste, lifelink, whatever, and attack you. And we had, like, the 2/2 delirium flyer guy. And, of course, the only time he ever has flying is because Jeremy has delirium for some reason this, you know, time, at this exact moment kind of thing. And so, of course, we hit for 11 in the air with my 9/7 land and my fucking, you know, 2/2 and the 2/2 flyer that Jeremy has. And, like, they die to Xaxes. And she's like, good game, thanks for the games, or whatever, like, brutal, bummer, whatever. And we're like, yeah, I'm like, thanks for the games, it's fun. And he's like, oh, I didn't see the land there. Oh, and she's like, yeah, I didn't either. And she's, like, talking about the game. She's like, oh, I figured we'd kill his land because he was, like, short on land. And I figured, you know, we'd get him. But, oh, good bet. Like, it's like, you know, no big deal. Good bout, whatever. And he's like, yeah, this guy's fucking deck box was in the way, so I didn't see it either. And I'm like, I've already kind of packed up my stuff. And I'm like, actually, my deck box was, like, right here. And I, like, put my stuff back in play. I'm like, my deck box was actually right here, and my lands were, like, over here. So I could see an argument for how, like, maybe she couldn't see my lands because my deck box is in between me and Jeremy, and she's sitting across from Jeremy, so there's, like, the diagonal thing. Yeah. But you're sitting right in front of me, and I'm pretty sure you can see my fucking lands right now. So, and he's like, whatever. I'm like, okay, whatever. So then we go to get our prizes, and we're talking to some of the new, like, the friends that we've made at the pre-release. Because, like, these guys are all, like, this is their local game, right? This is their LGS. But so we're, like, new blood, right? So they're like, hey, how'd you guys do? And we're like, oh, like, sadly, we won. We, like, 3-0'd or whatever. And they're like, oh, that's so awesome. And then we're like, they're like, who'd you play in the last round? And I'm like, we played, like, the younger kid and, like, the one girl that was here. I don't remember their names. They didn't really introduce themselves to us. And they're like, oh, that was, you know, whatever, fucking awesome. He's a little mouthpiece, eh? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. He was kind of cheeky, I guess. And so then now, of course, they're all happy that we beat the villain, right? And which we thought were going to be bad. Like, me and Jeremy show up. We're very obviously, like, I don't want to say, like, objectively the best players there, but we're the most, I want to say, probably a good word for it is the most competitive players that were there. So, of course, like, me and Jeremy were kind of, like, worried that we would show up and
be the sharks.
And then, and, like, nobody likes that, especially at a pre-release, right? And so, they're all happy that we beat the villain. And so we're getting our prizes, and the store owner, John, is like, he's really great. He's really welcoming. He likes to do fun little contests that don't take up a whole lot of time at his pre-release. So he, you know, he'll give out packs, and he'll say, like, you know, what's the name of one of my employees? And, like, whoever answers first, you know, gets the prize. And it's just a booster pack. But it's, like, nice because it builds community at your store, because sometimes maybe you don't know the judge's name or, you know what I mean? And, yeah. So, you know, and then he comes up to us and he's like, okay, guys, like, just so you know, we normally do draws, but you guys are the rookies, so I don't want you guys to feel discouraged because we normally ask questions about the store and the community, like who won last week's FNM or something, and I don't want you to feel discouraged. So the first couple ones, we'll lob some softballs for you, you know. We'll ask, like, a movie one, or we'll ask, like something about a TV show or a book, okay? And we're like, okay. And they're like, you know, what's Deadpool's real name? And someone's like, Wade Wilson, right away. And we don't get any packs. But it was nice that he thought of us, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, so in first place is Jay and Jeremy with, like, whatever, 3-0 or 4-0 or whatever, with all their whatever, blah. Thanks for coming out, guys, and hope you had fun and all this, right? And we're like, thanks. And then in second place is, like, the villain and his really actually nice partner. And then they, like, walk up all, like, upset that they didn't, like, win. And then the guy gets his packs, and then on the way out the door, he's like, John's like, thanks for coming, everybody, hope you had fun, you know, there's another pre-release at 2, and there's one tomorrow, so come on out. And he asks me and Jeremy, like, specifically, like, hey, do you guys think you'll come tomorrow? And we're like, yeah, maybe, that sounds fun. And the guy's like, yeah, thanks for coming and taking all the packs, cheaters, please come back tomorrow. I'm like, yeah, no problem. I'll come back and take your packs tomorrow, too. That'd be great, actually. So, you know, we didn't, but it would have been fun. But yeah, so that was my pre-release story, basically.
Awesome.
Yeah, I had a good time, actually. I had fun. And you know what? From start to finish, like, I was having a good time. They did a really good job. You know, it's a smaller store. Like, he said that some pre-releases, they'll get, like, 40 people. Which I think would be pretty tight in a little store like that, like, good for them. But I think it would be kind of tight, but, like, we had, I think, 22 people, and it was, like, perfect. Like, it wasn't sweaty, it wasn't fucking musty, you know, it was a nice space. They had, like, coffee and donuts for free for us. I've never been to a store that did that for a pre-release. You know, they were really welcoming of new folk, which is, like, sometimes can be really difficult for people when they go to a new gaming store. Even for someone like me that's, like, say, traditionally outgoing, and I don't really care what anybody thinks because I'm old now, and just, it still can be kind of daunting when you go to, like, a new game store and you don't really know anyone. So it was nice that they, like, that the employees cared that we felt welcome. I like that, you know? And the set was really good, actually. I was really impressed with the set. I thought, you know what, it looked a little simple on the surface, but I found that actually it had quite a bit of depth. Delirium, you know, I thought would be, like, an easy mechanic. It's actually, like, kind of, kind of difficult. Like, no, I don't want to say difficult, but it was like harder than I thought. You know what I mean? For sure. And like Madness, like KYT was talking about, Madness is an interesting ability in that, like, it seems obvious, like say Cascade, but like there's a lot of people that actually like play it that like the ways that you can play it really wrong. And so that made it interesting that I was like, ooh, like I have a lot of, you know, Madness cards, but my enablers aren't great, but like which ones should we play? And, you know, so yeah, I don't know. I had a good time. I thought it was cool.
You say hmm. I heard you say hmm.
Hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. That's what I thought. What was your favorite card, KYT? That you played against or heard about someone playing or...
Tireless Tracker, I think. I hated it so much.
Did you have one as well, or...?
No. Oh, my favorite card was the Mind Control, because it felt like it was I'm not sure fair is the real right word, but it just
you may have to work for it.
You might have to work for it, and it feels rewarding when you get it to work, when you have like this Madness, and then like being able to steal. I was in a position to be able to steal, like, let's say Sigarda. So I had a Reckless Scholar, like the Merfolk Looter.
Yeah,
going to be able to do that and then pay whatever mana and then get that. So that, it's like just, it's worse without the Madness. And actually, it's worse across the board because you're generally, to steal a bomb, you're going to need to pay quite a bit of mana versus in previous times where you paid 5 to steal anything you want, no questions asked. It's a weaker Mind Control, but it felt good playing it. And, the 3/2 flip card.
Speaking of like Reckless Looter, one thing, because that, or Reckless Scholar, because that was in the original Innistrad as well, I think, right?
In Zendikar.
Sorry, you're right, Zendikar. But and it was a fine card. But you know what I thought was really interesting about Reckless Scholar in this set with Madness was, like, especially in team games like Twitted Giant, or if you ever played like Star or Emperor or something, was that like, there was times where I targeted Jeremy with Reckless Scholar so that he could discard, like, Incorrigible Youths and, like, smash them for like, haste damage right away, and then still have mana left to, like, play a 2-mana, 3-mana removal spell or another guy that, like, could block. And I really liked, like, little interactions like that where it was like, oh, dude, you should target me with that. And it was like, oh, shit, I didn't even think of that. I just thought of it as, like, Looter. And that, like, Looter's good enough, you know? So, yeah, like, I thought that was cool. You know, my favorite card was, like... My favorite card, I think, obviously, other than, like, Startled Awake, my favorite card was, like, a really interesting... was Forgotten Creation. So it's a 3/3 with Skulk. Skulk, actually, I thought was a cool mechanic before I played with it, but now, actually, I think it kind of sucks. well, because it seems like they didn't want to make it like too powerful, so then it kind of got underpowered. Like, I don't know, like a 2/1 with Skulk is like, I thought would be pretty good, but it's actually pretty bad. Like, because it just trades with everything, right? Like a 1/2 with Skulk is almost like better kind of thing. But anyway, so my this Forgotten Creation is a 3/3 Skulk for 4, which is pretty good. But then just, like, during your upkeep, you can decide to, like, Pandora's Box and just discard your hand and draw that many cards. And I actually thought that was, like, that was great. That's a very cool mechanic. This might be cube playable. You know, it's probably not, like, the most powerful cube card ever. But it's, like, probably fun enough. And, like, because of the card quality in cube is so much better, it, like, it becomes a better card than, say, like, in Limited, right? But, I mean, like, with Madness, it's great. Like, it was a great card to have with Madness. Even just activating it once felt like I was drawing, like, 3 cards kind of thing. So that was sweet. And then I had a Triskaidekaphobia, which, for those people that know at home, is that each player with exactly 3 life loses the game, is 13. Basically what it says. Oh, yeah, with 13 life. And And, like, I feel like when you are, especially when you're playing limited, you should be playing cards that say lose the game on them. You know, like, like that's pretty narrow trying to get someone to 13 life, but it says lose the game on it. So, at worst, equity. Yeah, like, you know what I mean? Like, at worst, it's doing nothing, but I'm playing a 50-card deck, so what the fuck do I care? Like, I had 30 minutes to open a billion new packs and build something, so I figured it was worth it. I never got to play it, but there was definitely turns where it's like, oh, they're at 18. We have a five, like, we have a way to attack where, like, they wrath us, but we get them to 13 and they die. And then, so of course, then what do? Is they just, like, take all the damage and go to, like, 8 instead? Because it's, like, safer to be at 8 than it is to be at 13 somehow, right? Or above. So that was sweet. You know, those are fun. That's a fun, thing to play around. And I found out, too, for those of you that didn't know, at some point, I'm sure you guys on the show knew this because you're smart. But at some point, the two-headed giant rules changed. And so two-headed giant used to be, you started with 30 life, and you had two players, but you played on a team, and you shared your life total, basically. Like, if you got down to, you know, zero life, you died. It wasn't like you had to hit me for 15, and then, you know, Matt could play by himself for 15. But the life totals were actually that Matt had 15 and I had 15, which is relevant for things like, you know, target player loses half their life rounded down. So you'd have to, like, actually, like, you wouldn't be able to target the two-headed giant and say, like, you go from 30 to 15. You'd have to target, like, the J head and say you go from, say, 15 down to, what would that be, like, 8 or something, or 7? And then you would add that to, like, Matt's 15 life, and we'd be at 23 or something. So it's, like, way worse. Cards like that are sometimes way worse in two-headed giant. But now I found out, and I guess, Jeremy, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I found out from a bunch of people on Twitter, like judges and stuff, that like in two-headed giant now you share the life total.
So yeah, it's a shared life total.
Yeah, so if we're at 18, if our team life total is at 18, we both technically have 18 life.
Yes.
Like we both don't have 9 like we used to have. So I originally thought that Triskaidekaphobia wouldn't work because it says each player at 13 life. So then I was thinking like, well, this is actually kind of narrow because like they would have to be at 26 life for this to work. But actually if they're at 13 life, yeah, then they both are at 13 life. So then it works. So it's a little easier, I find. So yeah, so that was kind of interesting. But yeah, I had fun. I think Triskaidekaphobia or like this Skulky Pandora's Box thing is like my favorite limited card for the pre-release anyway. It was fun.
Yeah, I had a judge friend who kept seating the Triskaidekaphobia player at table 13.
Oh yeah, sweet. There was a bunch of actual pre-releases I saw, like midnight pre-releases and stuff, where like the people fucking like played in candlelight and shit. I thought that was kind of cool.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, and like it got all spooky and like, man, like the fucking face-to-face pre-release, of course, fucking face-to-face games. Like I'm sure their pre-release was like $6 and a button. And then like, they had like cookies and shit. Fuck. Did you play
it? Have you ever gone to face-to-face?
I have.
did you play there?
No, I did not. And it's usually, I mean, it's credit. I got to give specific credit. It's mainly the Toronto store that does that type of stuff. Because right. They got Tony the Chef, man. They got all the awesome people there. But I haven't gone to Face just because it's far from either Face, because it's far from where I live, even the one that I go to work at, whereas the ones that I do play at.
So you go there every day for work, but it's too far to go for a pre-release?
Usually I play midnight, and there's one that's less than a 5-minute walk from my house, so I'm going to go to that so I can walk back and sleep. So that's my thing.
I see.
That's reasonable.
Yeah. What did Jer do this weekend?
Work.
Sweet.
Woo! Yeah, you're jelly.
Oh yeah, you know it.
Yeah. No, I'm actually really excited about this set, simply for the fact that I've had to endure I always have been working on pre-release weekend. And for the last couple sets, Facebook, for about the last, you know, 3 or 4 days, would have just been pictures of people's expeditions.
Yeah,
so I'm
that's true.
Very happy that that is not the case. You still have a few people who are posting like their foils that they got in their packs, but for the most part, it isn't just like an expedition fest, which I really appreciate this go around. I was happy to hear your guys' stories, see what's going on with it. I'm excited to get a chance to play with the set. Looks like it'll be next week that I'll get to sit down and do some playing, so that's good.
What format are you going to play?
Huh?
What format are you going to play? Like, is it like a draft or is it
FNM? It'll probably be a draft. Yeah, FNMs are... Actually, sometimes they do a sealed for the first week, but I'm pretty sure it'll be a draft.
Right on.
So, I don't know. I don't know what big events we've got coming up in Edmonton this week. I found out that, like, we've got a ridiculous weekend in Edmonton coming up in July, I think it is, where it's... The Saturday is a WMCQ trial, like a WMCQ. And then the Sunday is a face-to-face open.
Oh, shit. La face-to-face.
Yeah, face-to-face. So, like, that's a pretty sweet Alberta weekend.
Right on.
Yeah, KYT doesn't tell me anything.
No, I know. You'd think that we'd, like, get some knowledge here.
Yeah. Like, who am I going to tell? Some random rig pig? Like, seriously. But no, let me see. Let's see. Is there anything exciting coming up this weekend?
Actually, funny, because I took a day off today, and so did PD. Because I didn't take a day off from Easter, so I moved it to this Monday, and PD Pablo is out of the office today as well. I actually wonder if PD knows that the Albertans know now. Because of the MCG Alberta thread.
Yes,
yeah. Right. He would know that, yes.
So that's, I hope he knows. Oh my. Yeah, so I don't know what's coming up here. Like, if it ends up being that, you know, Shadows Over Innistrad, I think it comes out this week on Magic Online, so I'll probably play a bunch of it on Magic Online. Play some, like, really, really terrible value pre-releases online. Or, yeah, the pre-releases are bad value. Release events used to be good, but they've kind of have been blended into the meh value of everything else. But yeah, I'll get to play the game that way. And it does look like Friday they do have a draft, so I'll be playing that.
Right on.
Yeah. I don't know if there's any big events on the weekend. Let me see. The 9th. No, that's in Calgary. So yes, there is a GPT for Toronto and Calgary on the 9th.
Oh, wow. Maybe you can come down.
No.
Okay.
No. Sweet. No, won't do that. Anything for love, but, you know, won't do that.
But won't do that.
Oh.
I mean, he can get half of his deck at home anyway.
Yes, only the lands. I'd have to play something like Mono Red so that I'd just have to get Basic Mountains or something.
That'd probably still be good. Man, how good is that 1/1 haste guy for 1 in red that, like, fucking flips into a menace guy? Like, that seems fucking good in all formats.
Is it a 2-drop, you said?
No, it's a 1-drop.
A 1-drop?
It's a 1/1 haste for 1, and then it flips into a menace 2/2.
Really?
Yeah, like, that
is
seems
it like,
good.
Is it a flips if... no spell cast? No,
yeah, it's old werewolf flip, yeah.
Okay, it's werewolf flip, okay. That's kind of cool. Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
I like that guy, and I like Skin Invader. Those are, like, the two cards that I'm looking forward to playing with.
Skin Invader. What is a Skin Invader?
It's the 1-red enchant creature. It has to attack each turn, and then when that creature dies, you flip it, and it becomes a 3/4.
Oh, the enchantment flips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, weird. And it's like the fucking Star Trek thing where it's like the bug in the brain.
Yeah.
Oh, sweet. Skin Shredder.
The only thing I don't like...
Well, Skin Invasion is the enchantment, and the Skin Shredder is the creature.
The thing I don't like about it is that it doesn't... It doesn't give any bonuses other than halves to attack each turn.
Oh, aside from the fact that when your dork turns into a 3-4, which is pretty good.
Yeah, but like, I just mean like you can't play it on your guy and get any bonus, so it just kind of like there's no, it gets PT toughness or something. Like, I feel like it should have given like at least 1-0 or something, you know?
Yeah.
Or even like haste.
Yeah, exactly. Like haste would have been good.
The also thing that like one of the commenters on Mythic Spoiler pointed out was that you can skin invasion on your opponent's creature.
Yeah, so they can't block.
Yeah.
So that's definitely an application for it. I don't know. I feel like it's like a different hammer fist. And I always look for those effects to like give your creatures extra value.
And like hammer fist was like 1+0, but like they couldn't block or something.
Yeah, but
haste, and then yeah. It falters a creature.
Yeah.
Yeah, for like a turn. Like that's pretty good. Like I like that's a good card. Like in mono red, like that's a pretty bad like magic card in a vacuum. But in like mono red, you're right. Like it just gives you that extra value that you need to like make your bad creature good late game, you know?
I don't know. I'm trying to figure out like what creature am I casting skin invasion again on?
That's what I mean. Guess... Like
the thing is that the opportunity cost is so low, like the chances of getting blown out by it are pretty low. And while it doesn't give a creature anything, it may be bad. It's just something that I'm keeping my eye on.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. Definitely worth keeping an eye on. The card in its situation seems very strong. It's just going to be a matter of what does the metagame look like and does this thing have any reasonable targets? Because I think using it as a very slow falter effect, you know, you're casting this on turn two, perhaps, on like their early drop, so yeah. That they attack into maybe your value one drop, maybe your werewolf that turned into a 2/2 or something like that.
Yeah,
maybe
like it's, yeah.
Or maybe you're on three. Yeah, maybe you're putting it on your own creature so that they can't afford to do some sort of early trade or do some sort of, they can't like bolt equivalent, shock it or whatever. So, yeah. Like the tough part about putting it onto a small guy is that then it means that they can negate this card completely by just letting you have your small guy.
But that's assuming that your small guy is not going to eventually be a big guy. Or that you're not going to play, like, Titan Strength or some other thing.
But, I mean, like, how many things are you going to put on one fucking guy and then they kill it? You know what I mean? Like, it's still an aura, let's be reasonable.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's one of those situations that whenever you give your opponent a choice, that choice can go poorly for you. Because they have the choice, they're going to do what's, you know, best for them.
Yeah,
and exactly. Like, yeah, you can force them into a situation to kill the creature that's got the skin invasion on it by, you know, pumping and all these other things, but you know,
they're still going to do, like, a good player will still pick the best thing for them, not for you.
Yeah, right? That's where it's like, yeah. I like this card. I like this card a lot better if I'm casting it on my opponent's creature.
Yeah, I think it's a lot better if you're doing that.
Okay.
Yeah. But no, definitely a cool card to watch. And like, if there are decks out there that become like kind of key decks that are running smaller creatures, that you're, because I'm assuming you're playing this in a very aggressive deck, that your aggressive creatures can beat in a fight, then that's going to be huge. Like if there's some sort of 1/1 or 1/2, you know, support style creature that's, you know, in play for an effect, much like the blue Eldrazi that draws a card. You know, if you're casting a skin invasion on that and then you're eating it with a 2/2, like that's the dream, right? And especially since this is low enough that you could potentially cast it and a smaller drop that can beat up like that 1/2 draw card. Like that's going to be an ideal turn because you're not keeping a creature back to block. You just have a creature that doesn't have haste that has to be back this turn. So you're getting even more value out of that non-attacking turn. But we're working ourselves into a pretty narrow corner, so
yeah,
it's going to be a case of let's see what decks are out there and what they do.
Yes,
I'm also excited that I get to play Fiery Temper again.
Fiery Temper, yes.
Oh, I played that way, way, way back.
Hey, situationally better than Lightning Bolt.
Yep.
Oh, did you know? Did you know it was our GP playmat art?
No.
And I wonder. I'm curious about your opinion because on social media, on Twitter, some people thought when Helene Bergeau tweeted that playmat.
Yeah.
Some people thought that voiced their opinion. They felt the art was like too much, like too violent, I guess. When we
too violent.
Like they said it was too much. Fiery temper. So I wanted your take.
Too violent? Let's look at the art, I guess.
Or too much. They said too much. I don't know what they really meant.
Fiery temper. So this is the GP Toronto, Matt.
Yeah. Most people are excited about it.
Maybe I'll actually just look at GP Toronto. GP Toronto 2016 playmat. GP Toronto playmat. Yeah. Apparently people are upset about this. Let's take a look. GP Toronto. They said that this is too much. I don't know. This looks fucking cool. Actually, blown up art. It actually, is cool because I can actually see what's going on. It looks like there's some kind of fucking angel or something in there. Burning some shit. And this guy's on fucking fire. Yeah, I don't know. Anybody that said that is a fucking weird.
Probably somebody who doesn't like being on fire.
Yeah. Whatever, you fucking, you fireist. Yeah, I don't know. It seems fine to me. I don't know. What do you guys think? Am I crazy?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you fucking nailed it.
I mean, I don't know. You never know what people have experienced, so.
Yeah.
I can say that, it's nothing that we haven't seen, on CSI, on CBS at 7 o'clock,
It's nothing we haven't seen on fucking 100 magic cards, too. Are they saying it's too much? Like it's fucking glorifying violence or something? Like, what do they mean too much?
I didn't ask them, so I wasn't conversing with any of them.
Right. So fuck them then. That's my opinion. Soon we'll just play with magic card art, and there'll be no art. It'll just be card frame and words, because we don't want to offend anyone. That would be
playtest cards.
Yeah, just playtest cards.
So how about them bannings?
Yeah, there's something you guys could talk about that I don't know really anything about.
Oh, those two guys can go off now. Let's get out of here.
Yeah,
the unbannings are much more interesting. Last week we really kind of covered that it was going to be one of the two, and one of the two went, so...
Yeah. Yeah. Talk about why the unbannings and bannings are interesting, though, because especially for somebody like me, I have no fucking idea.
Well, they gave blue something, so that's exciting.
Interesting. Yeah, that's kind of interesting.
Ancestral Vision, so a relatively good but somewhat harmless card, I think.
Yeah. I mean, they gave blue two things, really. I mean, if you sort of the meek is a blue, they gave blue things.
Well... I think that, so Thopter Foundry came back, or Sword of the Meek came back, which makes Thopter Foundry come back.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's necessarily giving blue a thing, but it's definitely kind of starting up a deck again. You're going to see, I think Agent of Bolas is already, starting to spike back up in price and all that kind of BS.
It already did.
Yeah.
The unbannings crashed TCG player.
Okay, yeah, that's about right. So we're going to see those types of decks. You're going to see everybody trying to jam Thopter Foundry into a few different shells to see where it fits the best. Are they going to put it in Lantern? Are they going to put it in an Urza thing? Are they going to put it in a black-blue control type thing? Are you going to put it in the old Tezzerator deck type thing?
I think Tezzeret went up a lot too, hey?
Yeah, that's what we were just talking about. Agent of Bolas, Tezzeret, Agent of Bolas.
Oh, sorry. I was confused. I thought you meant Agent of Bolas, I was thinking Disciple of Bolas, and I was like, "Why would that say?"
Yeah.
But I don't
so you
know
got modern. That.
I don't know modern, so I just went with it.
Now, you could 100% see some sort of controlly blue-black deck that is an Agent of Bolas deck that's got Thopter and Sword and does play Ancestral Visions. I don't know if you're going to see Sword and Ancestral Visions in the same deck very often. but it's going to be a matter of people just trying to find a spot where that fits.
So what's the big deal with Ancestral Visions? Like, I know it's a good card in that, like, you know, suspend four and stuff, but is it good because of Cascade?
Well, it says three card.
No, but I mean, like, the suspend four seems pretty hefty, like, so I'm just wondering why, like, that's a, why it was even banned in the first place, or was it one of those pre-banned?
It's one of those...
I think it was pre-banned, right?
Yeah, but it's a card that, like, you can't abuse it like you can in Legacy. Where in Legacy, you've got, oh my goodness, what is the Cascade Shardless do? Agent. Yeah, Shardless, which gets you crazy value off that card. But it's still a good card because in, like, control-type strategies, if you're spending your turn one to suspend that, and then you spend your first couple turns doing Remand or Mana Leak or Spell Snare or whatever like that, you're doing the one-for-one game, which is what you're supposed to do as a control deck, then that all of a sudden gives you, like, this refill, and it gives you a refill around, you know, turn four, turn five, turn six, whatever. Turn five, turn six, whatever, like that. When you need it, but also when you want to keep, like, Cryptic Mana open, because that might be a crucial turn, a critical turn for your opponent to try and jam through whatever they're doing.
Like the fact
that you get those three cards for nothing is massive. So it gives you, like, this ability to get up on cards, to do it in a case where you've already paid the price for it, you've already given your commitment to it, so you can keep your mana free up. It's just really good.
Yeah, and I think another effect it's going to have is on mana bases, on, like, blue-white X mana bases, and that your turn one is now very important.
Yeah, that it's, you can't, like, that it's blue kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah. Because usually they would play, like, a Glacial Fortress, or they would play a Celestial Colonnade or something.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I come in to play Tap Land, but now this, like, kind of puts them to a spot where it's like, you might want to play an island. You might want to play whatever the white-blue fast land. Yeah, Seachrome Coast or...
Right, okay.
Hollowed Fountain on tap, take two, you know? Like,
that'll be interesting.
Yeah, yeah, that'll be one.
A lot.
Yeah.
Right.
But white-blue players out there are going to be very, very happy about this. Matt Kirkland's of the world. So.
It's interesting because it may bring about a resurgence of Spell Snare as a card. Whereas, like, the maneuvering that you'll have to do to, like, play your tap lands if you still want to play them, like, with Colonnade, because I don't think, like, the blue-white deck can't afford not to play Colonnade. I don't think.
But you can't counter the suspend.
No, I know that. But they play Spell Snare as a way to, so first turn you play Island, and you play Ancestral Visions. Okay.
Yeah.
So second turn, you basically have to play either an untapped land, or if you play a tapped land, you want to play something that's interactive.
Yeah.
So maybe Spell Pierce or Spell Snare become more prominent in mid decks?
Yeah. I don't know. I think your Colonnade turn is turn three. Because turn three, there isn't, like, a three mana counter that you really care about. Turn three is kind of like a weird spot in that deck. You can afford to play a tap land because you can still keep up Remand. You can still keep up Mana Leak. You can do some stuff around there. So turn three just feels like that's going to be my Colonnade turn or my coming to play tap land, whatever I'm choosing. If I'm playing, like, Scry lands, like if I want to play a Temple of Epiphany or whatever. So that's kind of cool. I don't know where we're going to see the, like, I don't know if we're going to see Visions in other places. Like, I was even thinking, like, there's some spots where my janky Restore Balance deck, like, do I just turn it into a control deck as, like, a sideboard plan where I just take out the balance and just put in Visions and then all of my spells now draw three cards, which is kind of a cool thing to do.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a good card. If you're playing blue, you'll play it. Like, you'll see it being played in Scape Shift because it's gonna draw you three cards at a point where you'd like to be getting an extra land drop because you've probably burnt through most of the lands you've already drawn, or you need to make sure that you find your Scape Shift or your whatever they're playing now, the Chroma card, whatever that's called.
Bring to Light.
Yeah, Bring to Light. Like, just finding whatever your answer needs to be or whatever piece you need. Again, it'll do it right at the right time. You'll get it around your six, you know, turn six when you're dropping that land, and you can start to 18 people. So
yeah. Well, not to mention that your Bring to Light can now draw you three cards.
Yeah, absolutely. So
yeah, it'll be good. Interesting. I've heard a lot of people are talking about gifts packages.
Yeah.
With
Grixis Control, bring it back.
Yeah.
Bring it back.
That Tron may switch to blue Tron or blue white Tron as opposed to the traditional red green. Because the deck, I mean, if you really think about it, the ban of Eye is nice simply because it, like, I mean, if you look at like the red green Tron decks, they were like 58 of the same 60 cards almost every time.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you just play the hits. You play one different card over another, like you play like one more Pyroclasm or one more Kozilek's Return or whatever. But like, other than that, there wasn't a whole lot of deviation in that archetype outside of the sideboard, or outside of the main deck, but or inside of the main deck. But yeah, it'll be interesting going forward. So I'm excited to play the red green deck in this new meta game. See how that goes. Should be, we think it's
like what? Oh, the land destruction.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm fairly certain it's well positioned.
No fun for you.
Yeah. I'm really excited for Thopter Sword.
Yeah.
It was funny. I saw a thing online where it was like, do you think that Thopter Sword is a much more abusive combo than Splinter Twin? And I really think that Splinter Twin was still the more powerful of the two. Like, Thopter Sword, once it kind of gets going, it's really, really hard to stop. But you have time, whereas you don't have time with Twin. But the thing I like about the Thopter Sword is that it's just, it's another bridge deck.
Yeah.
And gotta love them bridge decks.
Yeah, we're actually adjusting to where I think we're putting Scavenging Oozes in the main deck. And this was actually before the banning, because yeah. Scavenging Ooze is just like exactly what we want versus the combo decks, because it's disruption plus aggression, which is a lot of times where we kind of were trying to figure out what to do exactly, because you know, our deck, you play the disruption first and then you play the threats afterwards. Yeah. And that's just a recipe for disaster, because what you're doing is that if you're disrupting, you're not putting any pressure on. And then when you tap out, because our threats are so expensive sometimes, you tap out to like start winning the game and then you just lose the game because you give them the turn that they need. But Scavenging Ooze is one where you can like literally play it turn two. And then once you untap with it, it can be the thing that wins you the game. But
yeah.
Which is awesome, but yeah, I'm stoked. So I'm as they say, I'm free to do what I want any old time.
What the fuck was that?
What are you talking about?
Woo!
Yeah,
I don't know.
No, I don't get that joke. Am excited to mess around with Draenor Temple. So. The temple.
One combo that I'm kind of excited about that was pointed out to me on Twitter today, Gitrog Monster.
Yeah.
Plus Dakmor Salvage.
Mm-hmm.
Plus Seismic Assault.
Yeah.
You just kill them. It seems awesome.
I mean, it's a 3-card combo, I guess.
Sure, but whatever. It's fun.
But it's an easier combo to hit because you can dredge. So getting the actual enchantment's going to be a pain in the butt.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have a lot of decks still.
Yeah. You can play gifts. I don't know. I'm excited about this whole...
I think Swans is still a better seismic combo.
Yeah. Nobody plays that anymore. That was a sweet deck.
Yeah. I really like Swans. Dismember is no good for it, though. Dismember is everywhere right now.
Yeah.
That's something I really want to do. Like, if I'd like to get a layoff so that I could just, like, play Fringe Modern combo decks. Do, like, a video series. Like, here's a Modern combo deck. It's neat. You shouldn't buy it. But this is what it looks like, and here's why it's fun.
Yeah. I was watching Travis Wu play his Glittering Emrakul deck, which is, like, oh my god, the most insane deck ever. And
yeah, it was the Glittering or the...
Okay, so what you do, it's five colors, obviously, is the basis of the deck is that you kind of have two routes to victory. Well, a couple. One is through Narset. And so one of the things that you do is that you, like, for example, the deck plays Wargate. So you can Wargate for a Lotus Bloom to get to six mana on turn four, play Narset. And then if you get to attack with Narset, your hope is to reveal Omniscience.
Yeah.
So you can play Omniscience, play Glittering Rush, and then just, like, Cruel Ultimatum.
You mean Omniscience?
No.
you do.
I'm pretty sure it's Omniscience.
It's Progenitus, obviously.
So, and then you just play all sorts of stuff. You just play all your things. And you play Brilliant Ultimatums so that you can play more spells and all that stuff. And then the other track you can take is the Goryeo's Vengeance track.
Yeah.
Where you Goryeo's Vengeance out a Narset really early. So yeah, that's fun. And then you can also just hard cast Omniscience. Because when you're Wargating a Lotus Bloom into play on turn three, you know, you're just one land drop away from playing, Omniscience costs 10, right?
It costs uncastable.
Well, you can sometimes just hard cast it.
Yeah. Yeah, you got all the tools going the right way, but yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that deck looks fun.
I want to dredge a little bit. I want to dredge. And I don't want to loam dredge, I want to aggro dredge, so I'm happy for this card, because this card, again, like I said a few weeks ago, I think it's just going to be a real handy piece in that deck. And I get to play with more bounty hunters, so. Or big game hunters.
Yeah, that is a thing.
Yeah, see, I just want a foil big game hunter, and Face-to-Face has them for $15, but never has any in stock. And I press the wishlist button, and
it never works.
It tells me I have to log in, so I log in, then I research the card, big game hunter. And I click, and then it says I press wishlist, but it logged me out already, so then I have to log in. So then I have to go to search, and I type in big game hunter.
This is the penalty we get. This is our karma.
And I spell game GEAM every time.
Every GEAM.
Yeah. And I hit wishlist, and I have to be logged in to use this feature. So then I hit login. I don't even have to, like, do a password or anything. I literally just have to press the button login, and it brings me right back in. And then I go to search, and I type in big game hunter. And I didn't spell it wrong this time. And I get there, and then I hit wishlist. And it says I have to be logged in to use this feature. And then I hit login. And then I type big game hunter. KYT, fix this.
I don't handle Crystal Commerce, man.
Oh, bitch!
Well, you know what? Find someone who does. They fix it. I'll buy them pizza.
So we're gonna wrap
cheeseburger.
Up.
Cheeseburger. I want a cheeseburger. What did you get?
Deluxe bacon cheeseburger pizza.
Oh, pizza. God. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, we're gonna wrap up, man. We're gonna wrap up.
So
I'm gonna play release this week, I think, this Friday.
Yeah, the release is this week, yeah.
Yeah, hopefully I get to, I'm thinking about drafting twice on Friday and then playing a Team Trios tournament on Saturday.
Yeah, that would be super cool. Fun. Yeah, that'd be super fun.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do Friday draft. Yeah, Friday draft.
But yeah, so quick Toronto update. We're going. We're working out all the details this week. And
did we
make? No, but we have enough money. I think we can.
I don't know what that means.
Like, we have our plane ticket and your plane ticket and a little bit on top of it.
Oh, sweet.
Not a whole bunch on top of it.
Sweet. Not, well, like,
we're gonna keep
I'll
it
just
going.
But it ain't stopped.
I'll eat sweet
stopped.
Sandwiches. I'll eat garbage can. I'll eat garbage can sandwiches.
Just take off Avery's plate when he's not looking.
Yeah, and if he is looking, then I'll just punch him in the eye.
Don't punch Avery in the eye.
Nobody won't know because he can't see, and he's not looking. You should always watch your back, Avery.
Kyle's going to make you food.
Well, somebody better. Fuck. I'm fat. I need to eat. Shit. Talk about staying hydrated. Stay fat.
Stay fat.
So, to catch up with the contest from last week, we got two people who sent us decks from their pre-release, Kim Ho and Josh Gilmore. Both of them sent him over.
Fucking Kim Ho's the best. You rock it. Kim, I have a whole bunch of clue stones still for you, so you have to, like, I don't know when I'm ever going to see you, but please, let's run into each other so I can give you those.
And for the sake of spreading the love, I'm sorry, Josh, I'm going to give it to Kim this week. Just because you got one a couple weeks ago, so sorry, buddy.
And Kim Ho.
And yeah. So I got inspired for this next contest, which will actually, I'm going to let this contest run until Toronto, because I want to announce the winner on the live stream in Toronto. Because
Toronto live stream
this
Friday,
contest
Friday, Friday
should be just awesome.
How awesome.
So, Jay, the writing prompt got me all inspired.
Okay.
So, what I want to do...
Write a worse movie than Batman versus Superman.
No.
Because that can't be done. So, good contest.
So, I want our listeners, or anybody, to write a story. Okay?
Okay.
Your characters are Guttersnipe and Glenn Alendra Pranksters. Okay? Those are your two main characters.
Shit.
They are on a quest with
vengeance!
With the Amulet of Quaz and the Wand of Ith. Now, how they find them, what those artifacts actually do, what those items are, totally up to you. I'll let you be super creative. How they find him, all that stuff. But they're on a mission to stop Mangara of Corindor from emptying the pits. Whatever that means.
Man, I don't even know I don't even know if it's the magic cards that you're talking about.
Empty the pits, magic card. Mangara counters magic card.
So your two protagonists are Guttersnipe and Glenalinda, are pranksters. Your antagonist is Mangara of Corindor. Your equipment are Amulet of Quaz and Wand of Ith. And you have to stop Mangara from emptying the pits.
Bam.
And what we'll do is we'll have live dramatic readings of these on the stream.
Oh, God.
At Toronto.
Bonus points if you can fit in Magikarp names. But make them, like, holistic. Like, don't just say, like, you know, Mangara drew her Doomblade and terrorized the other thing that Matt said, banishing it in the darkness.
Yeah.
You gotta make
it creative. We'll give bonus points for extra creativity and inclusion of magic cards. So that is the contest for the next couple weeks heading into Toronto. I am super excited to see what you guys come up with.
Dun, dun,
oh,
dun!
My God! North Carolina just sank a 3 to tie it with Villanova.
Nobody cares about what you're saying.
Left.
Jay, top 3 female celebrities. Go.
Like on my list?
Yeah.
Top female, like celebrities I want to like watch in a movie. I guess it depends on kind of movie.
Yeah.
Top 3, like Emma Stone is on there, like for sure. 100% Emma Stone for sure.
Kate Upton?
Kate Upton, yeah, Kate Upton. Pretty fine. I forgot about Kate Upton. She's so hot. But you know what? She is a terrible fucking actor. Holy shit. She's been in
movies?
Yeah. Yeah, she has. Surprise. And these are hard questions, because, like... I'm trying to think of actresses that aren't in porn, basically.
Oh,
yeah, I don't know. I could give you two, and then... I don't know. I'd have to, like... I'd be, like, afraid of missing one or saying one that wasn't hot, so now I have to... That's all I'm going to give you.
Can you name a third female actress?
Rebecca Romijn, who used to be married to John Stamos. Wrecked.
I stand corrected?
Yeah. Fucking caught you. That's what's up.
Before the show, it was just too funny to hear Jay rediscover Kate Upton.
This is true. These are true facts.
All right, guys.
I forgot about Kate Upton, to be fair, for the record.
See you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.
I love you all.